From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
The old Ben Franklin adage, three can keep a secret if two are dead. Always love that saying. It is a great way to describe Shogun. I finally saw it Sunday night, and I'm 2 days later still blown away by it. Hell yes, Mr. Rob Roop. Thank you very much. It's me. It's Mike. It's Mike Davidson Lives. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading, hanging out with me for the next half hour or so. Got some stuff to talk about, as per usual. But yeah, just, this is an amazing show, Shogun. It's one of the best things I have ever seen on television, and it's easily my favorite show since Better Call Saul went off the air. 10 episodes, I want to say issue, I'm in comic book mode here. 10 episode miniseries, FX, Hulu, and Disney involved in this, of all people. It's Disney accidentally made something good. It's kind of like when they left James Gunn alone to finish up Guardians 3. I don't know if it was one of those things where it's like, well, we've done all the DEI reports, we've done all the, you know, diversity training and everything. This is mostly a Japanese cast. We'll leave them alone. And they followed the source material accordingly. And I have to say, this is not seeing the original 80 miniseries or ever having read James Clavell's big, fat novel. That's on my to-do reading list sooner or later, but I've already got a bunch of books lined up as is. But just brilliant performances, memorable characters like Lady Mariko, John Blackthorne, and of course Lord Torinaga. And this is probably one of the most fascinating characters ever put on television. And there's been some critics that said that this show out Game of Thrones. It's amazing what you can do when you have focused writing. When you say to yourself, you know, the way characters behave matters. I'm being real fanboy about this. There's a lot I can't tell you about it if you haven't seen it already. But this is a very smart show. And it doesn't insult the viewer. It doesn't make you feel like you're being preached to. It's just people as they are in feudal Japan. And it's very eye-opening. And it's one of those things, too. Like, you know, I put it there with The Godfather and Lord of the Rings in terms of power. You know, it's a great lesson in power. And if you watch this thing, or if you, I guess, read the book, again, I haven't read the book, but if you go into the story, you don't come out of it going, man, it would be great to have other people in charge of my life. I mean, that's, of course, I'm kind of that mindset anyway, but just a fantastic show. Watch it when you can. Make sure the kids ain't around because, well, there's some swears in the subtitles, and a few people lose their heads here and there. Great show. Great show. Also, this past weekend finished up Dandelion Wine, a classic summer novel by Ray Bradbury. If there's a mistake made here, it's on my part because I started reading this last week and I'm already done with it before May. It's one of those things I probably should have put off until after Memorial Day because this is a summer book, but it's a great book. It makes you want summer to happen, even though there's some dark things that happen in this book. It's a coming-of-age 12-year-old boy. He loses his friend. His friend moves away. A couple of people in his town die. It's loosely based off of Ray Bradbury's childhood. And this is kind of one moment in the book where the protagonist gets a fever and isn't doing so hot. And their family's worried, and his younger brother goes to the town scrapper. I guess this is a guy that sells antiques or gives away trash. Basically, he's a roaming flea market. And they're talking. This is unintended humor, not dark. The situation's dark, but the younger brother goes, "Oh, he's had a rough summer, sir. you know, he found silverfish in his comic books. He broke a sculpture he had, a toy after he had for 2 days. And he's listing all these trivial things, the younger brother, not the bigger things. It's kind of a funny thing because Ray Bradbury, this isn't necessarily a science fiction book. It kind of flirts with some science fiction themes, some fantasy themes, but it pretty much stays grounded. But even in dark moments, in this book and, of course, other books, Ray Bradbury was uniquely optimistic. Like, he could find some optimism even in the darkest moments. Even at the end of Fahrenheit 451, there's a glimmer of hope. Just one of the rare writers, and one of the great American writers, I would put it that. Just a guy who loved to write. And somebody, I guess in the foreword, somebody asked him, well, why? What makes your experiences growing up all that interesting? And his response was, because I was there. It's not because he's Ray Bradbury. It's just because he was there. He experienced them, and he's relating them on to you. Your experiences are always going to be unique to somebody else. You may have shared experiences, but even those experiences you share with somebody or have had in common with that person, you'll have some sort of different take, some unique thought on what happened. And you may not come away with the same thought process somebody else would. That was his thing. So even if you are in a small town or a large city, or you're well traveled or you're not, anything that happens to you in your life is unique to you, and the thoughts you have about that are unique to you. And I think that's what he's coming away with. But that's kind of geared toward preteen reading, but it was just like, I'm building up my library. There's a lot of books I didn't read growing up because, television. And it's a good one. And he's a terrific writer. So if you're looking for something for the kids to read, or maybe if you're looking for a summer book, dig that out. Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury. Okay. I think it's time for me to start a hashtag. I don't know if I'm going to start it, but hashtag on Twitter X or on any other platform or social media, right? It's basically a catchphrase. It's sloganeering. It doesn't require you to think, but just requires you to parrot and to do, right? And that's all that is you see it, it's catchy, it's trendy, everybody's doing it, you do it too, right? The idea of the hashtag I have right now, two words, run together, of course, with the hashtag in front. Commit Britney. Commit Britney. Britney Spears needs to be committed. She needs somebody in her life that knows what to do. Of course, a few years back, everybody was free Britney because she shouldn't be under her father's thumb. He's mean. He's nasty. He's all sorts of things. She's an adult woman, for Christ's sake. She can do her own thinking. And as somebody who has seen relatives, loved ones waste away in retirement communities, it's heartbreaking. As somebody who has a brother who is under the care of our parents, it's nice. My brother's in a good situation, by the way. But what I'm saying is it's nice to have freedoms, but sometimes you can't have those freedoms if you are a danger to yourself or others. This is from TMZ, take it with a grain of salt, and I know I'm delving into celebrity gossip here, but there's a larger point to be made, okay? Britney Spears is in serious danger on both the mental and financial front and is doing way worse than she was under conservatorship, sources with direct knowledge tell TMZ. As for her mental health, our sources say Britney is completely dysfunctional. Since the conservatorship ended, she has no supervision and, according to sources, has radical mood swings and we're told are shocking. We're told the few people who remain in Britney's life say she's doing much better when she was under conservatorship. As one source said, she has lots of freedom in the conservatorship and the restrictions were there to protect her. She's not protected anymore. Of course, we're talking about the same one-time global pop star who now dances half naked with knives on social media, and everybody just says, oh, that's just Britney being Britney. Okay. All right, going on to the financial stuff here. Britney has been spending a fortune and is in real danger of going broke. Our sources say she's been going to the French Polynesia, staying at the Brando's, spending close to $1 million each trip between private jets, hotels, staff, etc., etc., etc. She goes every month or two. We're told she also goes to Hawaii almost monthly by herself, taking a private jet, staying in the presidential suite at the Four Seasons, and dropping $350,000 a trip. We're told that Britney has been spending a fortune and is real... Actually, I just read that. She cannot afford this. She has $60 million when the conservatorship ended, and now where the conservatorship started is in danger of going broke, one source said. So she $60 million is a nice chunk of change. And she's if she takes basically anywhere from 60 to 100 vacations alone, say she's not spending any money on anything else, that stuff is gone. Gone. She's burning through cash. And I'm sure she's still getting some royalties from music being played here and there. But if she's spending the cash faster than she's getting it, what's the point, right? But... this is a sharp contrast to everybody that thought it was best for her to be free. She shouldn't be under these restrictions, right? Now look at her. She's unsupervised, and she's pissing away all that cash she made. You know damn well she didn't grow up a normal lifestyle. She didn't grow up the same way you or me grew up. She grew up, she was a musketeer or something? You know, basically from her late childhood up until now, always under public scrutiny. And, of course, always on the road, always touring. Never any real time to, you know, establish roots someplace or actually have time to herself. I mean, once Hit Me Baby One More Time came out, what, 98? On to the next hit single, on to the next hit album, on to the next TRL appearance, tour. You have to have the high-profile celebrity relationship. And then she was just basically flat out busted. She had the nervous breakdown in public, and then everybody thought it was a good... That's the thing, too. She had that nervous breakdown in public, and everybody thought it was a great idea for her to no longer be under conservatorship, because you don't want daddy telling you what to do. And I don't know anything about the character of her father. I just know when you have a nervous breakdown like that in public, that's not to be taken lightly. But everybody jumped on that Free Britney hashtag. Everybody jumped on Justin Timberlake's case because the relationship ended so badly. And now she's free. She's free now to have another nervous breakdown or worse. $60 million, pissing that away. I mean, if you were to be given $60 million, yeah, let's just say tax-free for the sake of this argument. If you're given $60 million tax-free, you would say to yourself, you're set for life, right? Well, it depends on how you spend it and how much of it you spend and how much time you do spend it. If there's no investment to replenish it, if there is no work ethic or any progress made in your career to add to it, it dwindles. That's why you see so many lottery winners broke. And now you're seeing this with Britney Spears pissing away cash. But at least... she's free or something. She needs somebody to hit the brakes and stop, because she didn't have that childhood. She didn't have those experiences to tell her to stop. Now look at her. Jerry Seinfeld, I would have to say, a little better with cash. Recently it's been rumored that he's a billionaire. Billion with a B. He himself may have that sweet, sweet Taylor Swift type of tax bracket going there for him. But he's been around the block for a bit with stand-up specials, The Show. You might have heard of that show before, right? What was it called? Well, yeah, he stays active. He just directed his first movie ever, Unfrosted. It's on Netflix. And, out promoting it, bashing other filmmakers. But he had a very interesting insight on a recent interview. The New Yorker, I think, or one of those New York publications that do podcasts on the side, they interviewed him about comedy. And Jerry, you gotta understand, this is a guy who has doesn't really work blue. If he talks about something blue, he uses coded language, if ever. Seinfeld went a little blue sometimes, but they had to use coded language, and I'll get to that here in a second. But he talks about how politically correct everything is, how woke everything is in this interview. And I don't think he's a MAGA type. I don't think, you know, he's a John Birch type. He's Jerry Seinfeld, but he grew up East, but he has a sense of talking about things. And if you're a comedian, you don't want things to be off the table. You want them to be topical. You want to walk that edge, right? This is what he said about comedy. It used to be that you could go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Mary Tyler Show is on. Mary Tyler Moore Show is on. All in the Family is on. You just expected something would be funny. You just expected some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is a result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Now they're going to see stand-up comics because they are not policed by anyone. The audience polices us. We know when we're off track. We know instantly. And we adjust to it instantly. But when you write a script, he's talking like maybe a TV show or a movie here. If you write a script and it goes into 4 or 5 different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke. Well, that's the end of your comedy. End quote. And he is absolutely 100% right. Now, I want to make mention that he is, if not already, damn near 70. He's, you know, he's aged. Everybody gets older. And Bleeding Cool. You remember that? Bleeding Cool News, Ain't It Cool News, all that stuff. Basically, they ragged on him as being just another old crackpot who doesn't know a thing or two about comedy. They're taking the side of those who want things to be politically correct. And again, this is a guy who would write a page of jokes a day. In fact, I think he still does write a page of jokes every day. That's his discipline. He knows there's nothing wrong with being older. There's nothing wrong with being younger. If you're good at the game, you're good at the game. End of story. If you're doing this just to, you know, placate younger people who wouldn't know how to tell a joke. Here's the other thing, too. Like, I can list 10 funny movies growing up. What are the 10 funny movies now? I think the last great comedy, there's a couple that come to mind. I really liked 40-Year-Old Virgin, and I really liked Shaun of the Dead. I thought they were funny movies. They were not politically correct movies. They were just funny as hell. And Seinfeld's point is, look, when I'm up on stage and I'm bombing, I know it. I can switch tactics and gauge the reaction from there. He is directly talking with the audience. The audience is right there. Whereas, you know, if you're behind the microphone on some station, or you're in front of the camera for a network or maybe a movie, you have everybody giving you their thoughts before the product really is allowed to be present. That's why there was so much pushback against Dave Chappelle when he did The Closer a couple years back. I mean, the trans jokes, yeah, they were controversial, but that was his take. He didn't run that up the flagpole to anybody at Netflix. He didn't run that up the flagpole to any network censor. It was him telling people what he thought. And he has a habit of doing that. He doesn't work for the Democrat Party. He doesn't work for the Republican Party. He's Dave Chappelle. He's just going to tell you what you think. Either you like what he says or you don't. Some things you may like, some things you don't. But that's the risk you run when you're a comedian. You don't have all of these groups telling you what's safe and what's not safe. You walk that tightrope. And that's what's sorely missing in pop culture, is that tightrope. Everybody wants to play it safe because they don't want the protesters. Seinfeld doesn't give enough. And it's weird. It's weird that you have these things like Bleeding Cool basically supporting the standards and practices, the government censors, the politically correct groups over the stand-up comedian, just because he happens to be old. This is a guy who's been doing it for a long time and has been very successful at doing it for a long time. Loves what he does. He's an artist, for Christ's sake. He just happens to be a rich-ass artist. You're taking the groupthink mentality. Okay, you've learned nothing in pop culture. Congrats, Bleeding Cool, and any other sycophant media out there. Okay, speaking of comedy, this has gone wrong. As you know, The Onion has recently been bought out. And Not The Bee, which is a sister publication to The Bee, the Babylon Bee. They've been taking some shots at some of the jokes that have been recently published on The Onion. Because The Onion has not had the same cultural pizzazz as it used to. It doesn't. It's been passed through corporations themselves and heavily censored, or they let them run ragged with some jokes that you dare not say in front of grandma. Or, I don't even think I'd say these jokes in front of drinking buddies, to be honest. Jeez, old Pete. Just to kind of show you how bad it is, Not The Bee has screenshot a couple of these jokes that were on Twitter X. Okay, here we go. Bluey, you know the show Bluey from Australia, the kid show? Bluey praised for tackling difficult subject of walking in on parents during their scheduled weekly sex. HVAC technician confirms random clanking noise, just sound of pervert's erection hitting the metal duct. Okay, Walmart baby registry questionnaire includes check mark for whether or not pregnancy forced. Man. Jeez, old Pete. Yeah, so congratulations there on The Onion continuing to whittle itself away in the corporate structure there. Okay, so what we all got here? Oh, I guess more of the Columbia and university protesters here. And this is where I get kind of serious. Apparently, Columbian protesters out there in New York have taken a boat building. Of course, they have made classes remote learning for the rest of the year. As you know, USC has canceled the main graduation ceremony. And even out in UCLA, I retweeted this, re-X'd, whatever they say on Elon Musk's platform there. This Jewish student who was wearing the Star of David around his neck. It is a Jewish symbol, not necessarily the symbol of Israel. This was caught on video. He was prohibited from going to class by these protesters. They wouldn't let him into the front door. These inclusive types, this is just mind-boggling to me, because they're basically saying no to this Jewish student, even though this is just about Israel. They're basically doing the same thing that white supremacists would do when National Guard types back in the South would take black students into the school buildings. They're doing the same damn thing. We've gone full circle now. We're so inclusive that we have to be exclusive. We have to segregate ourselves. That's why, you know, at some universities, there are people that want, you know, there are black students that want black-only dormitories. Mind-boggling to me. It is a complete 180 from what Martin Luther King wanted. And now, okay, this guy, obviously Jewish, let's keep him from going to his class. And I don't know if he's got a scholarship. I don't know if this dude is working two or three jobs just to make this thing work. Of course, you know how I feel about the student loan situation with universities. I'll rant about that in another podcast. But basically, he's not permitted to use the money he's using on this university to go to class because these self-righteous buttholes are blocking his way. And nobody is doing a damn thing about it. And you got Columbian faculty members, Columbia faculty members out there in New York, circling around protesters, protecting them, coddling them. And these protesters are doing everything they can to keep other students from doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is showing the bigger problem. Nobody at these universities is responsible for a damn thing. And it is quite literally up to you and me to push back on this stuff. Okay? One person has done this right. Going back, I know I'm jumping all over the place, but there's like more and more of these little things popping up. UCLA, somebody rented out a giant television and a pair of speakers, and was replaying audio and video from the October 7th attacks. Things that these Hamas guys were saying to each other. And they were quite gleeful with what they did. And these are the same guys that these protesters are taking up for. Inadvertently or not, they are taking up for. You have to make this perfectly clear that the reason a lot of this shit is happening right now is because Israel was attacked. Innocent people were attacked. A good chunk of those innocent people were at a peace at a Middle East concert. The same type of people that are protesting now were slaughtered by Hamas. And they're sticking up for Hamas. No, it's Palestine. Who's running Palestine? And now it's not just about Israel. You're literally keeping Jewish students out from class. It's highly illegal. Lawsuits need to be filed. And like I said, it's up to us to educate people. And just to say, look, you want this shit to end. Quit sympathizing with people that would gladly slaughter you. Okay? I don't want death in Palestine, but I don't want to see in Israel or anywhere on the planet what happened in Europe back in the 30s or 40s. It's like every damn lesson we learn, we forget four or five. And that one in Europe back in the 30s and 40s, that was a pretty big one. Let's not forget that one. But whatever, right? Okay. Another race. I want to wrap this up here because it's getting a little late. But another reason for term limits, another reason for age limits, is because we can't keep sending the same people over and over again to do the job. I don't care if it's in Washington. I don't care if it's your state legislator. I don't care if it's the local dog catcher. You need fresh blood. You need to keep people engaged. You can't just say, I like the name and the other guy's mean, so I'm just going to... Case in point, this New York DA, she was, she won election quite a few years back. As a Democrat, she switched over to Republican, which goes to show you that it really doesn't matter your politics when it comes to these politicians. They just want to be in power. She got caught recently speeding by cops, going over the speed limit by a mere 20 miles an hour. And she went full Karen and said, "Do you not know who I am?" and blah, 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 blah. And then recently I don't think this is really an apology. She just said in another video that the stress of the job is getting to me. Well, if it's a stressful job, don't do the effing job. You're a district attorney. You're going to deal with some really unsavory characters. That's just, that comes with the territory, right? But it reminded me of just a little over a year ago. Tom Henry, who has since passed, he's the mayor of Fort Wayne. I just live outside of Fort Wayne here in Indiana. He got caught on camera by cops, body camera, after driving drunk with his wife, who's also now deceased, and is then mother-in-law. And, the cops pulled him over, and they took him downtown, and he got caught on camera saying, "I'm not going to forget this, I'm going to remember this, I'm not going to..." Basically, it was kind of a veiled threat toward these cops. And the next year, Tom Henry still won election. Of course, he died not too long after that due to cancer. But he ran again and won again. And the voters didn't care. They were just like, I just really like him. Dude, he was threatening a public servant just like this district attorney was threatening a public servant. And you can't... If you get to the point in your political career that you think you're above the laws you're supposed to steward, you need to go. And again, that's why we need term limits, because there's voters that just don't give a shit. They just, I like the guy, I like the girl, the other person's mean. Screw that. Term limits. Age limits. It doesn't matter if it's president of the United States, doesn't matter if it's your local dog catcher. We need this because apparently voters need checks as well. So there's that. Okay. Finally, you remember last podcast, Flamethrower Dog, yours for a mere $10,000. Slovenia They now have a security system that you can set up. It's linked up on the Mike Davidson Facebook page. You can put this bad boy around your property, and it fires paintballs. Well, big whoop, you say. Have you ever been hit by a paintball? Like, without the padding, I got hit in the knee once by a paintball. I think Jared Nissen, roommate, did this to me. Which, it's cool, Jared. It really is. But he left this big welt on my knee. Hurt like hell. So, if you get a couple of these, if somebody's on your property that's not supposed to be there, and they're coming for your house or whatever, a couple of these things will, like, knock the shit out of them. So my thinking is, for this house, you know, you get that. That's my first tier security system. You put that up, you know, the paintballs, you know, gunning people, then get the alligator moat in the second tier, and then when all else fails, flamethrower robot dog. Or maybe flamethrower robot dog needs to be outside, because I don't want to set the house on fire. That should be the first tier. Anyway, something's got to separate me from the alligators. I'll figure it out. Till next time, stay fresh.
You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @davidsonlives.